chat with some amazing human beings who are storytellers, collectors, and folklorists as we discuss the history of, inspiration behind, and importance of recording and sharing regional tales. And today I have with me someone that I've known longer than literally anyone else in my life, save my parents, Courtney Swihart.
Yay, I'm here. I'm here by surprise.
Well, Courtney is an integral part of STM. And for those of you who are not aware of what she does, Courtney, can you give us a rundown of all of the insanity that you deal with at STM?
So here at STM, I function as the business manager. So I look over, you know, all the boring stuff there. I also function as a producer alongside Heather, kind of her counterpart there. We were recently co-directors along with Mr. Deese. I am a cinematographer on shoots, the event planner, the gear manager, and I do all of the shipping and help manage the Kickstarter logistics. So I do a lot of the things that the more creative people don't want or have time to do to hold the together.
Yes. Yeah. Glue, if you will. You are the glue. I hear bumble.
I apologize for the squeaky toy that the STM mascot is currently battling. It looks pretty intense. I don't know if the dog or the flamingo is going to come out on top, but we'll see.
Keep me updated. The flamingo may wear Bumble out. He may have to take a nap.
Well, he's not very athletic, so he's going to be asleep very soon.
Oh, man. Okay, so you do a ton of stuff and you get to go on these amazing shoots. What was the first shoot that you got to be a part of?
So the very first shoot I did was on the Trail of Hauntings with you, which was a local shoot. If we're talking non-local travel, it would have been on the Trail of UFOs and Night Visitors out in Colorado.
Awesome. Was that your first time in Colorado?
It was my first time most places. I mean, like most small town kids in Ohio, I think it's pretty accurate to say when you went on a family trip or something, you'd go to one of the closest beaches and back. Sometimes you'd go to like Gatlinburg because it's a good old southern place to go that a lot of Ohio people go. But as far as going west, that is not typical for anyone I knew growing up. So that was a completely different direction for me to travel because I had done like Myrtle Beach and, you know, the Carolinas, Florida. So completely other direction from where I traveled before. And we got to see quite a bit of it. Like we were in the mountains, Rocky Mountains, obviously, but then we also drove through the Great Sand Dunes. We didn't stop. Well, we did stop to take a picture, but we didn't actually go in. So we got to see mountains. We got to see desert. We went to the UFO outpost, is that what it was called? Mm-hmm. Which was in a very desert-like place, a big flat dirt that looked like a different planet, honestly. That was pretty wild.
Yeah, the UFO, the watchtower, that's what it was. The UFO watchtower.
Yeah, with that such sweet lady and Snippy the horse.
Yes. Snippy. Snippy,
we got to meet a celebrity. That was the first celebrity I met. Snippy the horse.
Snippy the horse. Who I think has his own, I think they were building his own building.
Yeah, because he was in a temporary holding spot when we were there, and they were trying to build a more museum-friendly visiting center for him.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, so what are all of the places that you've been able to visit on STM shoots?
Okay, so we did Colorado. We've done, I mean, obviously the big ones were the big shoot in Alaska, because that was over 2 weeks and we were all over the place. We visited each region there because Alaska has the 5 regions, and we were technically in all of them. We did British Columbia. We've done New Mexico, Texas. We've been, I mean, obviously to like Tennessee, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. Where else have we gone? There's been a bunch of them. I'm trying to think what movies we've done.
That all sounds accurate. Everything you've said.
Oh, we went to Jersey Shore for 2 nights.
Right. The Pine Barrens.
We went to the Pine Barrens.
We got to see where bodies supposedly have been dumped by the mafia.
Yeah, we got to walk through the Pine Barrens with the DJI and get some cool shots. And we watched some swans who were kind of aggressive.
Right. That's true. I forgot about the swans.
Yeah, I remember waking up and having coffee and being like, do I need to run or just be real still now? How aggressive are these large birds? But yeah, just kind of all over. I know later this year we're going to Washington State. We're going.
Which is wild to me.
Yeah, because that's like completely other side.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's not as far as Alaska or BC, but those places are so far. It's.
Right. Those might as well be a different.
They might as well be different countries or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, been all over.
Yeah, and you get to be also on the shoots. You get to be the one holding camera while in helicopter mode.
Yeah, twice now. So in Alaska, we did a helicopter rental so that we could get all the aerial shots we needed. Mm-hmm. And because our director of photography, Zach, was not comfortable with being in a helicopter without doors on, I was the only other one who knew how to run the fancy DJI cinema camera. Mm-hmm. So I got elected to sit at the door, seat belted in, just a little bit hanging out to snake the head of the DJI out and get the shots. And we landed on a mountain there, got out, walked around just outside Denali Park. And then just in, technically we got on the helicopter in Tennessee, flew toward North Carolina and then back over the Smoky Mountains. We just did the helicopter thing again. And I again got to be up there with the DJI and shoot that, which is, I think it's really fun. I end up coming off of it looking like I've just been in a dryer or something because there's no doors on the helicopter. My hair does crazy things and I'm just holding on to dear life with this camera so that it doesn't, you know, fall or something.
Right, right.
But it's so cool to like, you look out, you see this vast distance that you're flying over. You look for interesting things that you want to film because you can't just film everything. You need to make sure that, all right, that has a cool ridge or, you know, something that's going to be recognizable as the region. And then you look at the monitor and you try to like pan over it in an interesting style, all while flying over it at however many miles an hour in a helicopter being pelted with wind.
Right. Yeah, that sounds pretty tricky.
It's fun though. I mean, anytime Seth goes, hey, we need to book a helicopter. I'm like, yes, I get to go on a helicopter.
Yes. Can you explain what a DJI is? I mean, we talk about it and we know what it is because we utilize it all the time, but can you explain that to the audience?
So that is our fanciest camera at the moment. It's technically made by Ronin. It's a Ronin 4D DJI, and it is a camera like we used to shoot the movies, but it is on a gimbal. So if I were to like, if this was the camera head and I were to like jump up and down with it, the camera wouldn't shake. It has an automatic head that like stabilizes it to make it look really smooth. So if you walk with it, you don't get the bouncing of the camera operator's footsteps because the gimbal automatically moves to compensate. So the shot is super steady. And on top of that, it has a little joystick at my thumb. So I can use that to smoothly pan the camera rather than panning my body, which would be more jostly in the picture. So it's just, it's a very fancy camera. Unfortunately, it only has a couple lenses for it right now because it is a little bit newer. So we're a little bit limited with it as far as like what we can shoot, but anything with movement, it's the camera of choice just because it is smoother, but it is also very, very heavy. It is a very big camera that you have to hold with two hands. You literally strap it to your hands and then you have to like just hold it against your chest. I think it probably weighs 25 pounds.
Wow.
Because it weighs about as much as the puppy does now. And after you hold it for a while, it is a little bit tiring, which is why Zach and I tend to pass it back and forth quite a bit. Because if you're using it for a whole day, your back's going to be shot.
Right, right. Now, this just reminds me, if you're used to carrying large things for your small stature, I'm thinking of high school. You were
I was on the bass drum line and for most of the years, all but one, I was actually the biggest drum on the bass drum line, which was like 30 inches or something. So I'm sure I looked ridiculous at 5'1" carrying a 30 inch bass drum. But those obviously, like, they have a harness and they're heavy, but I mean, they're hollow. Right. So I made it work there. And then finally my senior year is like, I don't want to go to the chiropractor anymore. I need to get a smaller drum. So then I moved all the way to the other end of the line and took the smallest one.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm definitely not afraid to carry big things or try to do all that. I know anytime we unload gear, we're always carrying stuff, and I always probably pick up more than everyone else would like to watch me carry. And Zach's always chasing me going, oh no, let me get that light stand, or let me get one of those things out of your hand. I'm like, no, I got it. And I just stubbornly waddle away with arms full of things. But it's just, I like to be efficient on these shoots. I mean, you and I set up all these shoots logistically, and you know, efficiency, gotta be efficient, otherwise can't get it done, especially because some of the stuff goes so quick.
Yeah,
like the last two shoots we were on, we were basically doing two things all the time.
Yeah I think that's something that doesn't, I mean, we mention it every once in a while on podcast interviews or whatever, but I don't think that it's something that people really think about or understand, is how limited our time frame is with some of these. Is like what LBL was.
LBL, we shot a movie
3 days or something.
It was three full days and then travel time. So that doesn't really count for the shoot, but
right.
We shot the movie. We shot, Alex shot a Strange Places. Eli shot a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up getting plenty of B-roll and everything, but during that we had all of our interviews. We went out with Helmut Holler in the woods and did all that stuff.
Yeah,
and I mean, we did have stuff that we had to drive to. Like, ideally interviews come to us and we can snap through them real efficiently, but there are times where we have to like get in the car and waste 30-40 minutes each way to get an interview, and it's important, so we do it, but that's time that we're not doing other stuff. So like our last shoot in the Smokies, there were times like the helicopter where it was me, Seth, and Tyler out on the helicopter, and then you and Zach and anyone else behind were doing interviews while we were gone. Mm-hmm. And that happened in BC as well. It was you and Mark and Zach doing interviews while me, Seth, and I think Jason. Alex and Jason went out on the ATVs and did other stuff. So often we're cramming all this in such a small time window and often doing more than one project that we're splitting into teams just to get it all done in the time frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It makes it go by really quickly. I mean, like you said, it's something that we need to do in order to get all of these projects done, but it does make it go by quick.
It makes it go by quick. And I think when people hear about all the places we go to, which are great, we do get to see them, but it's not like we get to experience them like a traveler, because we are still very much there for work. So yes, we get to drive, like Texas. We went to Aaron's home state of Texas for a week, and we spent hours and hours in the car every day driving between places at times.
Yes.
And I saw nothing but city there. Like, right. I don't feel like I've seen Texas. I've just seen highways and sprawling cities. Mm-hmm. Even when we were driving between cities, it was just more city.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah,
we get to go there, but it's not like we get to be like, all right, and this day we're going to go do tourist things. Because, I mean, it's a work trip. It's our jobs to be there and shoot this content and get in and out as quick as possible, because it's all costing the company money that we then have to hope we make back with the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that the trip to Texas was definitely, because the whole point was to get to the Triangle, and the Triangle is denoted by three major cities. Those are the boundaries, the points.
And it turns out everything between those three cities is just more city.
Yeah, or flatness, just completely flat and nothingness. And so I know we were like, Aaron, this can't be Texas has got to be more than this. And he's like, I promise
Aaron,
it is.
Where's Texas? I don't see Texas.
I see Dallas. I see Dallas, Fort Worth.
And Austin.
And it's just never ended since that point. But that was one where I remember actually getting a little panicky in Dallas because we were driving to the Goatman Bridge to get some B-roll. And we were driving for a solid 30 minutes and still hadn't left the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what? This is too large of a city. This is too large. I need trees.
Are we going in circles? What's happened?
Right. Exactly. Just the kind of stuff you don't see here. But so of all the places that we've traveled, what's one place that you would love to go back to if we could, regardless of logistically, what would work for a movie? What place would you like to see again?
So the first two that comes to mind are one, Alaska, just because it was beautiful there. And I got the fortunate experience of like going and staying in that frontier cabin, which I did miss having running water there, and going out in Alaska to an outhouse in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom when there could be who knows what outside was a little terrifying at times. But I mean, it was so peaceful there. I think that's the best sleep I've gotten in my whole life. I remember just some nights after working, going back there and just like passing out and waking up and being like, what day is it? And obviously just driving through there, everything's beautiful. Like we got to go to the Denali Park to shoot, but we were driving to very specific locations, getting out, getting our 20 shots or whatever, getting back in and leaving. So I would like to actually go and experience that park and like do some hiking or something, because we did zero hiking there.
Yeah.
And the other one would be Nederland, Colorado. Like ever since that trip, I've thought about that place. That town is so adorable. And I know it's not like a big town in Colorado, but it was so nice. The downtown there was super cool. And they do that Frozen Dead Guy festival that I think would be interesting to see just from like a cultural point of view. Yeah. And we loved that one restaurant brewery thing that was downtown. And I follow them on Instagram now, and they're always showing their new dishes. And I'm like, I want to go back there. It was so good. That was my first trip. So it's obviously somewhat special to me in that regard. But I just remember liking a lot of Colorado when we were going through it. Yeah. And as we drove from the first house to the second house, like the scenery and everything changed so much. And it wasn't that big of a drive. So I feel like that's the sort of place you could go and like stay in two places and feel like you're in two different states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was quite a difference.
Yeah. Where would you want to go back to? Because we've been to most of the same places together.
Yeah, it would
Bumble.
Be
Bumble.
Probably the same places, actually, because Alaska was just so gorgeous. You just can't beat that. British Columbia, I think, was close and tried, but still tried. Alaska still wins for me. So Alaska and Colorado for sure. And I don't know, Colorado, like you said, it was so different in places that we went to, because the first places we went, it was big, sprawling, flat areas, but you could see the mountains in the distance. And then by the end of the trip, we were in the mountains. So you're just seeing ridge lines and stuff when you look outside, but you're surrounded by trees and so on. It wasn't this big open sky.
Mm-hmm.
But even in the flat areas, it didn't seem so desolate or anything because you could see those mountains in the background. So there was still a difference in terrain on the horizon. And I don't know, the sky was really pretty at night.
That's where we tried Shannon to do that. Us. Yeah. Well, that's where I fall in love with Shannon too. I adore that woman because I think going into that Colorado shoot, I got been on like what two on the Trail of Hauntings or something. We'd done a couple paranormal unexplains or whatever. But at that point I was not on the crew. Not really. I had come in to help with stills. Yeah. Like behind the scenes photography, because with COVID and everything, the crew had dwindled. Yeah. So I was tapped to come in and help with that. And then by the time the Colorado trip was being booked, they lost a cinematographer from being able to go. Mm-hmm. So Seth was like, hey, do you think you can film? And I'm like, well, the camera settings are similar to stills. I can figure it out, because why not? I'll figure it out.
Right.
So I got tapped to go on that. And it's like, all right, I'm going on this trip where I really only know like Heather. And yeah. We're going to be, you know, I think there was four of us that flew out of Ohio. And then we were meeting Shannon there.
Yeah.
Whom I had never spoken to before. Mm-hmm. And like instantly, she's just the nicest, coolest person to hang out with. And just so chill. I remember sitting on the porch of the first house we were in there, which was on that horse farm. So yeah. We would sit out there at night and just watch the horses meander by, or go out in the morning and get coffee and watch the horses. We'd go up and pet them. And she was just so fun to hang out with and talk to. And we had to do a lot of driving on that trip. And she just made it all so easy. Because at that point, it was three girls. Like, that was kind of our girls' trip, I guess. So that was really fun. Guys.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I remember the horses. I never went up and petted them, but I remember watching you two go and talk to them and pet them and stuff. And the biggest thing I remember from that house is being told that there was someone in the house when we were pulling up at night.
Yeah, the boys thought that was quite funny. We came up one night, and the thing is, this is an Airbnb that was on an active horse farm. Mm-hmm. So the people who own the horses lived on the property, but fairly far away. But they'd have to come over and like tend to the horses occasionally. So we pull up one night, and there's like a barn or a shed off to the side that usually had like a farm truck sitting at it. The farm truck was there as normal. Doesn't mean anyone's there. It just it sits there. It's a farm truck. Mm-hmm. The boys are driving in the front seat. We're in the back. And as we pull up, I forget who it was. It was either Seth or Zach. It doesn't matter, because they were both in on it. Right. And one of them goes, oh, did you see that up there in the window? And no, we couldn't. We were in the back seat. Yeah. And as we get out of the car, they're like, no, I swear we saw someone in a window upstairs. Yeah. And we're bad at turning lights off as a crew. So of course there's a light on up there. So if there was someone in there, we could have seen it, but there wasn't anymore. They're like, no, they ran. So for the next, what was it? Like half an hour, we go in the house and the boys are pretending to look for an intruder in the house that they had made up to scare us.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, you guys, you just stay here. We're going to go look around. Like,
they half-heartedly looked, because I remember.
Yeah.
I remember the girls looking. We're like, did you check the closet? And they're like, oh no, why would we look in the closet? We're like,
did you look under the bed?
No. So we're looking under beds and in closets and stuff. And then eventually we notice they're just sitting down laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The joke had played out, but they weren't going to tell us it was a joke until we figured it out, I guess.
Yeah. So now that's the thing on every shoot, for the most part, I feel like at least one time whenever we're coming back,
did you see that?
Did you see the person in the window? And we're like, shut up. One of these times it's going to be the boy who cried wolf. Hopefully not, but one of these times.
Well, the only time I ever got scared at a place, I think it was, remember that A-frame we stayed at on the Chestnut Ridge out in the middle of the woods?
Yes.
That looked like there was a murder cabin next to it that was abandoned.
Yeah.
I remember when we got there thinking, so it's on the Chestnut Ridge in PA to set the setting. It is very rural. There's lots of woods. It's kind of hilly. It's down a dirt road, super remote. It looks like in the place where it was, it should have been just a hunting cabin, but you go into this A-frame wooden cabin and it's nice. It looks like it was decorated in the 70s.
Yeah.
Lots of oranges, browns, olives, shaggy carpet, spiral staircase. For some reason, in one area of it, it looks like it had been set up to be like a party place. Like there was a bar. I feel like there was like a mannequin or something.
Yeah.
Or it was a statue.
Yeah, it was a statue.
Which was a little weird, but it was super comfortable. It suited our needs. And it had, interesting backgrounds for us to film, and there wasn't a whole lot of choice in the area. We ended up staying there twice, I think. But the one time we came back after like a night ops or something, and I remember pulling up to the place and we drove by the murder cabin, which is like an abandoned cabin that we had to pass very close to our cabin. Mm-hmm. And like coming up and being like, all of the lights are on. I know we leave lights on sometimes, but did we leave all the lights on? Like that time I was like, we're in the middle of nowhere. We're also hit and miss on if we lock all the doors because there's so many of us sometimes. Like that was a shoot with four people plus interviewees going in and out. We all use different doors. I'm like, are we going to die? Because we're pretty far from anything. Like, and it only took me a minute to be like, no, this is 100%. We left the lights on. We do this. It's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think it was just the location and that we'd already been like out in the dark and we're coming back in the dark. And
right. Yeah. The murder cabin. That's
It's
a good description for it. So another thing that you haven't got the chance to do more than once, just because of the way that filming has gone, but you helped with makeup on the Jersey Devil shoot.
Mm. Yeah. So Jersey Devil, I mean, I helped film the interview part, but then when it came to all of the stylized reenactments that were in the film, I was there and kind of helped with whatever needed helped with, because we actually had a pretty full crew on that because it was local. It was in Ohio. It was near all of us. So people were popping in and out. So every day it was kind of a different need. But the one day when we were doing the midwife sequence, which is a very bloody sequence, I got to splatter our poor midwife with blood and stuff, which I fortunately had done before, because in high school, our school does a thing around prom time called, they call it like the mock accident or something like that. It probably is a fancier name, but my stepmom was a paramedic and on the fire department. So she always helped organize that and do the makeup for it. So in high school, I would be pulled out of school that morning and allowed to go help her do the makeup for the fake injuries of these kids that were unfortunately drinking in a drunk driving accident. Don't drink and drive on prom night.
Yeah.
So I was able to kind of try and remember how to do some of that stuff to make the splatters look somewhat realistic and not just like giant globs. Fumble.
He's got things to say. Did the flamingo win yet?
Well, he had an octopus and now a fox. So he's just fighting everybody.
Gotcha. The Jersey Devil shoot. I remember you doing that. And like you said, you had a background with that, but you also helped with getting the costumes and everything situated, like all the props.
So I don't, that's the first time I think I properly like was starting to like step into like somewhat of a production role, because I wasn't just watching the finances for that one. I ordered or found all of the props. I made some of the crocheted shawls that were in the movie, just because of the time era it was in. I didn't want something that was super manufactured, and I crochet. So I actually had some around that I was like, these can get ruined. It's fine. And then they're actually handmade shawls that will offer a little bit of authenticity to the sequence. But yeah, I did all that. I did background still photography, and I helped with script supervising at certain parts. And I mean, there was times I was hitting the button on a fog machine or pretending to be lightning to make a scene more dramatic, hiding behind a chair, flicking a switch on a light. And
Yeah, that shoot. And that one was one of our longer shoots, but it didn't seem long because we still had to film three separate sequences
over it was like in each. Every 2 days, it was different.
Yeah. So each sequence, for those of you who have seen the Jersey Devil movie that we made, each time frame took us about a day and a half to 2 days to film. Because I know the midwife, we only had her actually another thing working with actors, or this works with interviewees too, as far as that goes. You have such limited time frames. Our midwife, not the midwife, but the mother leads, we had her for just a few hours. because of her schedule. So we had to get through the bloody scene and everything pretty early on. They were the first ones, I think, that we filmed.
They were the first ones. We actually went in order. So we did the leads, and then we did the traveling
the silent film.
Outlaws. Yeah. And then we did the 80s at the end.
Right.
It was like 2 days each were allotted for those. And I mean, we got through them. It was just every 2 days it was completely different because we were filming in different styles. So different lenses, different angles. We had to think about our lighting differently. Like on these shoots, especially when we're just doing a bunch of interviews, we know how we're framing the interviews for this film. Like sometimes we change between films, obviously, but we're like, all right, this is what we're doing for this movie. But on that shoot, it was like every 2 days, okay, this is essentially a new movie. So we need to completely switch our mindset here.
Right, right.
Exactly. That was also the shoot that I broke my foot on, which everyone likes to talk about, which is why I was doing less filming and more still photography and script management, because I would have to sit frequently.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that very clearly when you fell and at the bottom of the stairs said, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Like 50 times. And I'm like, I don't think you're fine if you have to try to convince everyone you're fine.
I was dedicated to being there and I didn't want to be sent home. And I certainly didn't want to go to the doctor or anything because I knew there was nothing to be done. I didn't know how bad it was at the time, but I just knew I hurt my foot.
Yeah.
I was fine once the swelling went down.
I was fine.
I was. Nothing fell off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can still walk. It just was a rough couple days where my foot was so swollen it wouldn't fit in my hiking boot. So I was running around in sandals or slip-ons or whatever I could get on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I remember that. And it's not the first time that you ended up with an injured foot on a trip. Because in Gatlinburg this last year,
you ended up
selling things. Because this is another thing that you're like the main person, like selling stuff whenever we go to events. You're like our point person for that. And you had gotten stung and then had to deal with that on the, what was that, Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Conference?
Yeah, it was Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Conference. I went hiking with Seth and Jason, like you do. We were there because it wasn't a shoot. It was a vending event. And we had gone down there like one day early or something as like, you know, it's a big thing to take all of that merch. Like it's a lot of extra work. Vending is as much work as a shoot. It really is. The packing and the unpacking and the loading is horrible.
Yeah.
So we took a couple hours and we went for a hike in the park. We did a couple miles or whatever on the way back. A bee that I didn't notice landed on the back of my hiking boot and just decided to sting me right on the heel. Actually the same foot now I think about it. And I'm minorly allergic to bees. I have a pretty nasty local reaction just skin wise. But by the time I ended up getting in the car, because luckily we were on the way back to the car, we were pretty close. I called Heather, who was back at the place we'd rented for the 7 or 8 of us to stay at. And I was like, hey, do you have Benadryl? I know I don't have any. Can you run down to the bodega at the bottom of the hill and get some? I'm on my way back and I need it immediately. And Heather, like a superhero, went down there and got it and was back with it by the time we got back. But my whole foot swelled up. I couldn't get shoes on again.
Yeah.
I had to like sell everything at the booth from sitting as much as possible. Yeah. Because we were event sponsors, we had someone coming around to like check on us sporadically to see if we needed anything. And she just kept bringing me ice because she felt so bad because my foot looked so horrible.
Right, right.
And I mean, it was swollen for I think 3 or 4 days that time.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that was no fun, but you got through it like a trooper, like you do, like you do.
And now I keep Benadryl in my purse and my computer bag.
These are all learning opportunities is what this
all is. All learning, just so much learning.
Yeah. So the biggest thing, well, I don't want to say the biggest thing, but it is pretty, pretty freaking big. I mean, we've got Monster Fest coming up here. As far as one of the biggest things that you're working on right now, I know we've got a whole list of things to go through, but Monster Fest is a huge thing. Can you explain to everybody what Monster Fest is and why they obviously should come to Monster Fest?
So Monster Fest is a cryptid themed event that we host here in Canton, Ohio. There isn't a whole lot of events like this in Ohio. So when we started planning this, we wanted to bring this sort of event to our home for people here to enjoy. So on June 28th, we are doing a STM film premiere of Cursed Waters, The Creature of Lake Okanagan at the Canton Palace Theater, historic theater, maybe haunted, who knows? Come check it out. And after that, there's going to be a Q&A with some of our guests from the event, STM crew, and that sort of thing. And then we are on the 29th is the main event at the Doubletree in downtown Canton. We have a vendor hall that I keep having to ask add tables, but I feel like we're around 60 plus vendors at this point for the event, including our sponsors and guests. We're having film screenings and we're having live podcast recordings. There's speakers. We're doing workshops, one of which Heather and Aaron are hosting, which were kind of my idea just because I wanted something where people weren't just watching people talk, that there was something being demonstrated or shown to them at the same time. So like Amy Boo is going to show people how you cast Bigfoot footprints. And Mike Ann's going to go through like how to collect evidence in the woods and kind of wood safety. We have Joe Dutt, who actually is the head of Team Spectre that does the ghost hunting at Canton Palace Theater. He's going to be going through different tools that could be used for ghost hunting and kind of what they do, just kind of like a beginner's guide. So we have all that stuff going on. We have food trucks coming this year just to give lots of options. They're actually shutting down the street next to the theater, the hotel, it's like where you drive to like go unload as a vendor. They're shutting that down completely for our food trucks to park on. So there's going to be room for people to hang out outside this year and eat if they want. But I mean, there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff. Like our guests are pretty varied. Like we have Lyle Blackburn coming back. We have Ken Gearhard coming. We have the Astonishing Legends guys. We have Shay Steingass from History and Travel Channel. Paul Bartholomew is coming. We have Ryan Sprague coming. We have Jim Harrell coming back as well to do a live podcast. And then as far as the live podcasts, we have so many that are going to be happening that day. We have From the Shadows, Sasquatch Experience.
Cryptid Campfire, right?
Cryptid Campfire is going to be there. We have Jeremiah Byron's podcast.
Yeah, Bigfoot Society.
Bigfoot Society. I was like, I said Sasquatch Experience, and I just kept saying Sasquatch something. But yeah, there's going to be a whole lot of stuff, and it's all family friendly. Kids 12 and under getting free. That's very important to STM as like kind of a company philosophy, is we want things that families can enjoy together. So everything would be kid appropriate. It's during summer break. Come on down, check out stuff. And once you pay for your ticket to get in, everything else is included. Because I've been asked about that. Like, do I have to pay more for the vendors or for the speakers? Do I have to pay more for the workshops? Because some conventions do go that way. One price of admission and you get access to absolutely everything for the whole day.
Right. That's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
And if you buy tickets before the event, you're going to save $4.50.
Awesome. Yes. Yeah, so pre-order your tickets and show up on June 29th and come to the 28th if you want to see.
The 28th is a different ticket because that is from the Camp Palace Theater. So that is the only thing that isn't included. It's everything on the 29th that's included. The 28th for the film premiere is being sold by the Camp Palace Theater. There's a link on our website. But again, it's a very inexpensive ticket that actually is also helping preserve a historic theater.
Right. And we'll be premiering Cursed Waters for that one.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you can logo. watch the movie and then come to Monsterfest and meet the director, which is a cool thing because all of the STM crew will be there. So if you're a fan or wanted to talk to any of the crew or any of the guests, they will be there for you to physically talk to and meet.
Right, right. Yeah, it's going to be a good time. We're excited about it, looking forward to it, and looking forward to meeting everybody that comes on out to Canton, Ohio that day. Okay, so at the end of every episode, I always ask my guests to tell me a story. I'm trying to think of a story that would be, can you tell a story from our youth that helped people recognize just how long we've known each other? A story from when we were younger, perhaps, that could be the story for the day.
I don't know what one, like Careful Be Heather, when you threw the softball in my eyeball.
God, you can go through a couple of them. I mean, you don't need to do the softball in the eyeball thing.
It hurt.
Okay. So the one, I'll say that story. That story. I used to pitch for a softball team, summer ball, nothing serious. And Courtney was like, yes, I'll catch for you.
I was trying to be helpful.
So I pitched the softball and it missed her glove and went right to her eye, busted her glasses, gave her a black eye. She said the sun was in her eyes, but the sun was behind her. So
I'm not good at hand-eye coordination.
Anyway, I just remember that being a thing that apparently has scarred Courtney in multiple ways because it keeps getting brought up.
Well, now when someone throws something at me to catch, I normally just move. I don't even try to catch it. I'm like, this isn't my skill set. I hope what you threw is not breakable.
Yeah, people shouldn't be throwing breakable stuff anyway. So that's on them. That's on them if it breaks. Mm-hmm. That's not your fault. But yeah, what's the Careful Be Heather story that is so famous?
So we went to the same babysitter as children. Heather started going there when she was very young. She's 10 months older than me. Very important. So when I started going there, it's always important. So whenever I started going there at 2 weeks old, Heather was already going there. So from the time I was 2 weeks old, she was 10 months and 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
We were at the same babysitter and we continued going there together all through elementary school. How old were we at the time? I don't think we were in school yet.
Probably not in school. No, probably not.
So we were probably like four and five. Yeah. We were 4 and 5 and our babysitter had this big back deck where we were able to play outside, but still like be close to the house and whatever. And we would go out there and just play like little kid imagination stuff. Well, one day we decided to blindfold each other, spin each other in circles, and then try to verbally direct the other person to something. So I went, it was fine. We blindfolded Heather, spun her in circles to get her dizzy and disoriented. And I forget what I was trying to get her to go to, but it wasn't going well. She was going, I think, in the complete opposite direction. In the one corner of the deck, which had this big wooden handrail around it, had some vines growing up it that had thorns on them. So I see Heather feeling around, trying, and I was like, oh no, I start to panic. She's going to just plop her hands down on this vine full of thorns in like 2 seconds. Like she was going right for it. And I panicked, and my dyslexic brain, who wanted to say, hey, Heather, be careful, thorns, just blurts out, careful, be Heather, which naturally confused Heather. So she then slams her hand down onto the thorns immediately after I said that, and then was very annoyed with me for quite a while that I allowed her to then plummet thorns into the palm of her hand, to which we had to go inside and take care of.
Yeah, I just remember going, what? And putting my hand down at the same time, and then the thorn in the hand. So that's the Careful Be Heather story. I specifically remember also at one point, another thing that the babysitter had, eventually it wasn't there when we first started going, but eventually they get a nice above ground pool, and they built mm-hmm. this deck up around it. And the deck had a gate that they had a lock for. And I remember, yeah, for safety. I remember explaining to Courtney one time when we went up to unlock the gate, I'm like, okay, let's get inside. Let's lock the gate mm-hmm. and let's throw the key into the garden, over the rail into the garden. And this will be like, in my mind, I was like, this will be a science experiment as to how we get out of here.
Yeah.
And Courtney's like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So we did it. And obviously the only way to get out, I'm pretty sure you were the one that climbed out over the fence.
Yeah. And had to, and then get the- it was thrown into a garden, which was rose bushes that weren't growing well, but still had thorns, and tall poppy flowers that, which at that age were significantly high on my body. So I'm like wading yeah. through poppies, trying to not like stumble into a thorn bush stump at my feet to find this little tiny key to unlock the gate to get you out.
Yeah. It was a great time. Good times. Good times. Yeah, those all kinds of memories I've got from there.
Well, we'd also frequently walk down to the corner video store and rent VHS tapes and get pizza from the old Crossroads Pizza that's still there. The movie store is obviously gone.
Yeah, corner video was a lot of fun. That you were, my dad, I remember having him watch like horror movies. Like the first time I saw Nightmare on Elm Street was with dad. But that was when I was younger, and there was a whole situation where I started to be scared at night, and mom banned him from letting me watch horror movies. But when we got older, you were the introduction for me to horror movies. Really? Because you were into all of that. And I remember one of the first things that you showed me.
Sorry.
I remember, you're fine. I remember one of the first things that you showed me was like the Pumpkinhead movie.
I would go down to corner video, and I didn't know any of the movies, and they were all a quarter. So yeah. I would pick them purely based on the cover.
Yeah.
So if it had mm-hmm. a cool cover, because that's how I got like Puppet Master and The House, yeah. because it had the hand ringing the doorbell.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. You were my introduction to that, because there was a time mm-hmm. you were definitely getting horror movies all the time, and mm-hmm. we were watching them.
For some reason, I feel like that video store was like mostly horror movies. Like I remember there were only like three aisles, and like mm-hmm. two of them were like 70s, 80s into 90s horror movies. Mm-hmm. And the other stuff I just had zero interest in. Right. So yeah, there was like a solid 4 or 5 years where I'd walk down there and rent stuff, and you and I would watch it, or some of the other neighborhood kids mm-hmm. up until the point that one of us, being you, got a car and we had the option to go do other things.
Right. Yeah.
There was that time you tried to pick me up from school in the morning. So Heather was older than me. She had a car first. And at that point, I was a little bit older. So I lived on Main Street, but I had to walk to school. And I also was in the band. So I frequently had large instrument cases I had to carry. It's Ohio. It snows. That's mm-hmm. the setup. Woke up one day, I had a big bassoon with me I had to take to school, plus my school bucks. It's a 3-block walk. It was very cold. I know someone with a car who has to go to school the same time as me. So I called Heather and basically begged her to pick me up, because I knew her parents didn't let her drive if there was anyone else in the car with her. She was supposed to yeah. be alone.
Well, side note, that day I was driving my mom's car because she had broken her leg. And so it was my parents' vehicle at the time. Just throwing that out there. Adds yeah. extra.
So I wasn't taking no for an answer. So I begged. I was like, please, it's so cold. This is so heavy. Don't make me walk. I don't have any other options. So she picked me up. I lived at the top of this hill that then went into town, but to like, you couldn't see down the hill because it was curved. So we pull out of my driveway onto an ice covered road, start to skid, mm-hmm. look back. There's a semi truck coming up the hill behind us. And naturally, gut reaction, I just start screaming, we're gonna die, we're gonna die, we're gonna die. Heather informed me that this was not helpful in the moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we got the car going and it was fine. But in the moment, I was just screaming, we're going to die. Heather didn't like that. And I heard about that for years. Anytime I would ride in her car to not be dramatic and tell her that we were going to die.
Yeah. It's not helpful whenever you're trying to correct a vehicle that's sliding on ice to hear, we're going to die.
Well, we were. We almost did.
But we didn't because you screamed at me. And yeah, so
I was helpful in alerting you to the danger of the situation. You're welcome. Oh,
yeah, thanks. Thank you. Still,
I think that counts as a scary story, honestly.
Yeah, that's true. It does. It counts. It counts. Anyway, thank you for taking the time to be on the Lore You Know today, Courtney Jo.
Of course. It was an honor. And anyone out there who would like to, you know, meet us or Shannon LeGros that we talked about, she's going to be at Monster Fest. Come on to Monster Fest and meet, you know, us if you want, or any of the other super cool people on the crew, any of our guests or speakers or podcasts. Come see the super cool stuff the vendors sell, because almost all of it's one of a kind. You're not going to get it from anywhere else. Like, these vendors physically make these things. So come to Canton. Like, there's other cool stuff there. Come see the Pro Football Hall of Fame while you're in town. Like, make a weekend of it.
You're not far from Cleveland. Go see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame while you're here. I mean,
yeah, Ohio's not that boring. Come on over.
Where can people find you if they want to follow your adventures?
Oh, so I mean, obviously, smalltownmonsters.com is a great place to just check out occasionally. Mm-hmm. Then I'm on Instagram at Courtney_Jo. And that's probably it.
All right. Yeah. Cool.
If you email the STM's contact email, that also comes to me.
Right.
But yeah, just Small Town Monsters and Instagram.
Awesome. Awesome. Sounds good. Well, thank you again. And everyone, thanks for tuning in. And as always, you can email me, Heather at smalltownmonsters.com. And until next time.
Bye.
Presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, and Monster Fest 2 at smalltownmonsters.com.